Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. You know, you read the headlines all the time.
Yeah.
The gut microbiome is basically pitched as the secret to human health, right?
No, absolutely. It's everywhere.
Yeah, like it's linked to your digestion, your immune system, your mental health, your overall risk of disease.
Yeah.
I mean, it really seems like the ultimate key to understanding our bodies. So I keep wondering why, when you go to your doctor for a chronic illness, do they almost never prescribe a microbiome test?
Right. It's frustrating.
Exactly. Like, why aren't you leaving the clinic with some tailored microbial therapy designed specifically for your gut?
Yeah.
There is this massive disconnect right now between the glowing headlines of all these scientific breakthroughs and, well, the reality of everyday clinical practice.
Yeah, it is a fascinating space to look at because the gap isn't due to a lack of scientific discovery. You know, the science is moving incredibly fast.
Right.
But translating a complex biological ecosystem into a reliable, everyday medical tool is, well, it's honestly one of the hardest challenges in modern medicine.
And that is exactly what we're getting into today. Today, we celebrate the work of an international coalition of microbiome experts from leading institutions across Italy, China, France, the Netherlands, Israel, and Austria, who have advanced our understanding of translating microbiome science into clinical medicine.
It's a huge collaborative effort.
It really is. So our mission for this deep dive is to unpack this lost in translation dilemma. We have mapped the gut microbiota's potential. We have these amazing sequencing technologies, but we're essentially stuck. Let's start with the biology. What makes this so much harder than, say, developing a standard blood pressure medication?
Well, think about the human heart or the lungs, right? While there are individual variations, a heart basically functions the exact same way in everyone.
Sure.
But the human gut is unimaginably heterogeneous. I mean, you and I could be perfectly healthy, yet we possess completely different microbial ecosystems.
Oh, wow. So your gut is basically a unique rainforest.
Exactly. A totally unique rainforest. And because of that immense complexity, proving a direct cause and effect relationship between one specific bacteria and one specific disease is extremely difficult.
Especially for chronic diseases, I'd imagine. Because if I catch a stomach bug, it's usually just one bad bacteria causing one very clear problem.
Right, that's exactly the distinction. An infectious disease is a single invader. But chronic conditions like diabetes, obesity, or autoimmune disorders, they involve this deeply tangled web of interactions.
Between what, all the different microbes?
Yeah, between thousands of different microbes, plus your genetics and your immune system. It's a massive web.
Wait, if every single person's gut ecosystem is completely unique, how do you even run a controlled scientific study? Like, if I eat a different breakfast than you or live in a different city, doesn't that completely ruin the data?
That is the massive methodological roadblock researchers are fighting right now. When you try to study that tangled web, you run into literally countless confounding factors.
Just from daily life stuff.
Exactly. What you eat, where you live, your environment, and especially the medications you take, they all muddy the data. And on top of that, there has historically been a huge lack of standardized protocols globally.
Oh, meaning labs do things differently.
Yeah. If one lab in London collects a sample and processes it differently than a lab in Tokyo, the data just can't be compared. Without reproducibility across the globe, you simply cannot build a practical tool for a doctor to use.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
And even if you get the science perfectly standardized, we still have to figure out how to pay for it and, you know, how to actually use it in a hospital.
Right, which brings us to the logistical and cultural barriers. Logistically, a lot of microbiome research is driven by these brilliant academic centers, but they are relying on grants.
So they don't have the deep pockets.
Exactly. They often run trials with small sample sizes because they simply don't have the massive scale, infrastructure, and funding that the pharmaceutical industry provides to run those enormous multi-center clinical trials.
And on the cultural side, I imagine doctors are already totally overwhelmed. Like if you hand a primary care physician a spreadsheet listing 10,000 bacterial strains found in my gut, what are they supposed to do with that?
Most wouldn't know where to start, and rightfully so. Medical schools haven't historically trained doctors to interpret massive ecological data sets.
Right.
Clinicians aren't confident enough to integrate this into a treatment plan because, well, the clear, actionable guidelines just haven't been written yet.
So we've essentially mapped the geography of the microbiome, but we still don't speak the local language of how it actually interacts with our bodies on a daily basis.
That is the perfect way to look at it. We have the map, but we don't know the local politics, the trade routes, or the regional dialects of those microbes.
But researchers are actively building that translation dictionary.
Right? They are. And to understand how we bridge this gap, we really have to look at the diagnostic tools we are currently using and where they fall short.
Let's get into the technology then, because we're moving way beyond just taking a sample and counting how many bacteria are in it.
Oh, far beyond. The field is heavily utilizing a state-of-the-art tool called shotgun metagenomics.
Shotgun metagenomics, okay.
Yeah. In the past, scientists would look at a tiny marker gene to just identify what broad family a bacteria belonged to. But shotgun metagenomics is different. It sequences all the genetic material in a sample simultaneously.
Everything at once.
Everything. This gives us what we call strain level resolution. It doesn't just tell us what species are there, it reveals their functional potential, like what those specific bacteria are genetically equipped to do.
Oh, hold on, let me make sure I understand this. It's like, instead of just taking a census of who lives in a town, shotgun metagenomics tells us what tools everyone has in their garage. Like, we know who the carpenters and the electricians are.
That's a great analogy. You know exactly what tools they possess. But, and this is a big but, even with the costs of the sequencing dropping, pure DNA sequencing has a fundamental blind spot. DNA can tell you a bacteria is present, and it can tell you what tools it has, but it cannot tell you if that bacteria is actively using them.
Oh.
Because a dead microbe leaves DNA. A dormant sleeping microbe leaves DNA.
Ah, okay. So it's like taking attendance in a classroom, but it doesn't tell us who is actually awake and doing the work.
Precisely. So to see who is awake, researchers are pushing for functional omics.
Functional omics.
Yeah, things like metaproteomics or metabolomics. Instead of looking at the DNA blueprints, these tools look at the actual proteins and chemical byproducts the bacteria are actively producing in real time.
Wow, okay.
That is the only way we can see what the microbes are actively doing to the human body at that exact moment.
And here's where it gets incredibly compelling, right? Because when researchers apply these advanced high-resolution tools to specific diseases, the diagnostic signatures they are finding are profound. Take colorectal cancer, for example.
The discoveries here are genuinely game-changing. Researchers conducted a massive metagenomic analysis of nearly 1,000 colonoscopy patients. And they didn't just find microbial signatures for full-blown cancer.
Right.
They identified distinct bacterial profiles for the precursors to cancer-specific types of polyps called tubular and sessile serrated adenomas.
Wait, meaning we can potentially spot the microbial environment that allows cancer to develop before the tumor even has a chance to form?
Exactly.
That's incredible. And it's not just a general signature, right? They actually pinpointed specific bad actors that are driving this.
They did. They found that a specific branch of the bacteria, Fusobacterium nucleatum, is strongly linked to the disease niche. But it gets even more specific. They identified certain strains of E. coli that carry a very specific mutation.
A mutation that does what?
This mutation gives the E. coli what we call procarcinogenic potential.
Wait, a bacteria that actively promotes cancer, how does it even do that?
It literally acts like an arsonist. These mutated E. coli strains produce a chemical toxin called colibactin, and this toxin physically damages the DNA of the human cells lining the gut. That ongoing DNA damage is what paves the way for tumors to grow.
That is wild. It's not just a bystander sitting in a diseased gut, it's actively damaging the tissue. And we are also seeing these diagnostics get incredibly sharp for inflammatory bowel disease too, right?
Yes. Inflammatory bowel disease, or IBD, is notoriously complex. But a massive 6,000 sample analysis found specific bacterial clusters that can reliably separate ulcerative colitis from Crohn's disease.
And they're very similar conditions.
Very similar. But what is vital here is the accuracy. They achieved an accuracy rate of over 90%.
I mean, in medical diagnostics, a 90% accuracy rate for distinguishing between two highly complex overlapping chronic conditions, that's a massive achievement. But a 6,000 sample supercomputer analysis isn't exactly something a local doctor can run.
No, which is the beauty of this specific breakthrough. The researchers successfully translated this massive data signature into a multiplex droplet digital PCR test.
Okay, let me translate that for our listeners. They basically took this complex ecological data and turned it into a rapid, targeted lab test-like. The same underlying technology we use for COVID testing that a normal hospital can actually run and interpret.
Exactly. That's the translation from lab to clinic in action. And the diagnostic power doesn't stop at gut diseases. We are seeing the microbiome used to predict how patients will respond to cancer treatments, specifically cancer immunotherapy.
This is the therapy that relies on a patient's own immune system to fight the cancer, right? How does the gut fit into that?
So your immune system is deeply educated and primed by your gut microbiome. The microbes in your intestines send chemical signals through the intestinal wall.
Like instructions.
Basically, yeah. These signals act like a training camp for your white blood cells, preparing them before they travel through your bloodstream to fight a tumor. Studies show that by looking at a patient's gut microbiome, we can predict whether their immune system is properly primed to respond to the immunotherapy.
Which highlights a terrifying consequence when things go wrong. Because the deep dive into the source material notes that taking antibiotics negatively impacts how a patient responds to this cancer therapy.
Yeah. By taking broad-spectrum antibiotics, you are literally wiping out that microbial training camp. You are essentially deafening the immune system right when you need it most to listen and attack the tumor.
Okay, I have to push back here for a second, or at least play devil's advocate.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about these incredibly rigorous, highly specific clinical diagnostics for cancer and bowel disease.
Right.
But when I go online, I am bombarded with ads for direct-to-consumer microbiome stool tests. You know the ones?
Oh, definitely.
You box up a sample, mail it in, and an app tells you what vegetables you should eat based on your gut. Honestly, they feel a bit like a biological novelty horoscope, but aren't they a net positive?
Mm-hmm.
Like, isn't some data better than no data? At least people are eating more fiber and paying attention to their health.
I totally understand the appeal, and public engagement in science is generally a good thing. But the scientific consensus and the firm stance of the researchers we're discussing today is that these direct-to-consumer tests are currently a significant problem.
Really? A problem?
Yes. It comes back to false medical confidence.
How so?
Because they lack standardization and clinical relevance. They display huge variability in their analytical rigor. Giving people highly specific dietary or health recommendations based on non-standardized, out-of-context data creates serious risks of misinterpretation.
So they might get the wrong idea completely.
Exactly. A patient might alter their diet in a way that is actually harmful or ignore a real medical symptom because their app told them their gut is, you know, perfectly balanced.
So the risk of giving bad advice outweighs the benefit of getting people to eat more spinach.
It's deeper than just bad advice, though. It risks a catastrophic loss of public trust.
Oh, I see.
If patients and doctors view microbiome testing as a vague wellness gimmick like a biological horoscope, rather than a rigorous medical tool, it deeply hurts the adoption of the actual validated diagnostics we just talked about. We need the public to trust the science when the real clinical tests arrive.
Yeah, it makes total sense. We can't let the hype poison the well. Okay, so if diagnosing the microbiome is like reading a map, therapeutics are how we actually change the terrain. How do we treat the gut?
The most famous example is the fecal microbiota transplant, or FMT.
The stool transplant.
Exactly. This is where you take a healthy donor stool and transplant it into a patient's gut. For patients suffering from recurrent clostridioides, difficile, a severe life-threatening intestinal infection, it has been a major, undeniable success.
Okay.
It is highly effective, and there are now established international guidelines for donor screening to make it safe.
But C. diff is an acute infectious disease. When we try to use these stool transplants for the chronic conditions we talked about earlier, it hasn't really scaled, has it?
No, it hasn't, and there are several massive hurdles. First, there are always lingering safety concerns about accidentally transmitting unknown infectious agents despite rigorous donor screening.
Right, because you're transferring a whole ecosystem.
Exactly. Second, differing global regulations are an absolute nightmare. Is a stool transplant a drug? Is it a human tissue transplant? Is it a medical procedure? Different regulatory bodies around the world say completely different things.
And then there's the biological bottleneck of the donors themselves.
Yes, finding what we call elite donors.
Elite donors.
Yeah, to treat a complex chronic disease, you need donors with a very specific, perfectly balanced microbial biomass. They are incredibly rare. Relying on a constant supply of elite human donors is simply not a scalable model for treating millions of patients with chronic diseases.
So a standard stool transplant is basically clear-cutting a diseased forest and dropping in a whole new jungle ecosystem, hoping it takes root. It's powerful, but it's blunt, and it's hard to source the jungle. What is the scalable alternative?
Because of those limitations, the field is aggressively moving towards scalable, live biotherapeutic products, or artificial microbiome therapeutics.
Artificial, meaning grown in a lab.
Yes. They are reproducible, defined, and engineered in a lab. For instance, the FDA has recently approved donor-derived consortia-specific blends of purified bacteria for the prevention of C. diff.
Okay.
They take the effective, active elements of a stool transplant, but standardize them into a consistent, scalable product.
We are also seeing what researchers call next-generation probiotics. And to be clear to the listener, this isn't the generic lactobacillus you buy in a yogurt cup at the grocery store.
Not at all. We are talking about highly specific autothonous members of the gut microbiome.
Autothonous meaning bacteria that naturally evolved to live deep in the human gut, right?
Correct. Okay. Bacteria that are fundamental to our biology, like Akkermansia mucinifilla and Faecalibacterium prausnitzii.
Mouthfuls.
Definitely. But they play vital roles in maintaining the gut barrier and reducing inflammation. Researchers are heavily investigating how to cultivate and deliver these specific strains to treat chronic diseases.
And what about bacteriophages? I know phages are viruses that exclusively attack bacteria, but how are they used as a therapy?
Bacteriophages offer a highly targeted approach, which is really the holy grail of microbiome therapy. They work by lysing, meaning they physically latch onto, inject their DNA into, and pop open very specific targeted bacteria.
Wow. So if you know that a specific strain of mutated E. coli is producing that DNA-damaging toxin we talked about earlier, you don't just blast the whole gut with antibiotics.
Exactly. You introduce a phage that only hunts that specific E. coli. It clears out the bad actor, the arsonist, without wiping out the healthy, beneficial ecosystem around it.
To go back to our analogy, if a stool transplant is clear-cutting the forest, these artificial therapeutics and bacteriophages are more like microscopic sniper rifles, taking out the exact threat or planting very specific seeds to restore balance.
It really is precision ecosystem engineering, but, and this is the crucial turning point for the whole field, knowing the diagnostics and having these precision treatments is totally useless if the medical system isn't legally and structurally built to handle them.
Right.
How do we actually get these tools into the doctor's office? What's the roadmap?
Well, it all starts with standardizing the science globally. We talked about how lack of standardization ruins data. To fix this, researchers have created the STORMS checklist.
STORMS.
It stands for Strengthening the Organization and Reporting of Microbiome Studies. It provides a strict set of rules for how human microbiome studies must be conducted and reported, from how the sample is collected to the exact statistical analysis used.
Which is huge.
For the listener, this might sound like boring academic red tape, but this is literally the bottleneck keeping these cures out of your local pharmacy. If everyone reports data the same way, we can finally compare apples to apples, which allows regulators to actually approve these treatments.
And speaking of regulators, there are massive moves being made in Europe right now. The European Union is moving to classify microbiota as a substance of human origin, or SOHO.
Okay, what does that mean practically?
By legally assimilating it to transplantable tissues, like a blood donation or a bone marrow transplant, it standardizes the regulatory framework across borders. This makes it infinitely easier to run large trials and develop treatments safely.
And the way we run those clinical trials has to change too. We can't just keep looking at the biology in a vacuum.
The trial designs absolutely must mature. Right now, many trials focus purely on biological outcomes, like did the overall diversity of the gut bacteria change?
Right.
But to convince doctors to prescribe a treatment, trials need to use clinical primary outcomes. Did the patient's symptoms actually improve? Did the cancer tumor shrink?
And we need to look at screening populations to catch diseases early, rather than just testing these tools on patients in the advanced stages where the disease is already deeply entrenched. Which goes back to the scale problem. Academia can't do this alone. They need to partner with industry.
That partnership is essential to achieve the good clinical practice rigor that regulators demand. But those massive trials also need mechanistic design informed by basic science. We can't just throw microbes at a patient and hope they stick.
Give me an example of that. How does understanding the basic mechanics actually change how we treat a patient in a trial?
Take antibiotic preconditioning before giving a patient a new microbial therapy. You might think, wait, why would we give antibiotics if we are trying to build up the microbiome?
Right, that seems completely backward.
But basic science showed us that if a recipient has a highly diverse, deeply entrenched microbiome, even if it's a diseased one new, healthy microbes have a hard time taking root. There's just no vacancy.
So by giving the patient a short course of antibiotics before the treatment, you intentionally weaken the existing stubborn bacteria. You clear physical space in the forest so the new, healthy microbes have room to move in and set up shop.
Exactly. You are mechanically helping the new microbiome to engraft and become a permanent part of the recipient's gut. Designing clinical trials around these deep mechanical understandings is how you get consistent results that doctors can trust.
So what does this all mean for the people actually delivering the care?
This might be the most important implication of all. We are looking at the creation of a completely new type of healthcare professional, the microbiome clinician.
Wow.
Yeah. We need to fundamentally train doctors, dietitians, oncologists, and gastroenterologists to communicate across disciplines. They need to understand not just traditional human biology, but the complex functional chemical pathways of microbes.
It's a total medical paradigm shift. Yeah. To bring it all together, what is the ultimate takeaway from this sweeping global effort?
Microbiome research has produced incredibly reliable discoveries for disease risk assessment and precise therapies like engineered consortia. However, for these breakthroughs to reach patients, the scientific community must fiercely standardize its trials, improve its regulations, and fundamentally retrain healthcare providers to understand microbial data.
Which leaves us with a fascinating question to ponder. If our gut microbiome dictates so much of how we process disease and respond to medicine, what happens to our medical history? Will future doctors need a baseline sample of your childhood microbiome to understand who you are today? Will we start freezing our healthy microbes in biological banks, just like we do with umbilical cord blood, so we can restore our bodies decades later? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
So draw the lines, run the trials, let the data speak.